Merkel Media.
This was all circulating around the base that a giant had been killed, but no one was supposed to talk about it.
I saw three long bony fingers reach up underneath the door, curl up to grab it, and then disappear.
When he came over to me, dude, he slithered over to me.
And this giant comes out of the cave and they're all frozen. And he starts running and firing at this giant. Well, the giant moves. He's got a spear in one hand and he's running really fast and spears Dan and holds him up like this. Somebody yells, shoot him in the face, shoot him in the face. They basically decapitate him.
Got closer. When he got about 15 yards away from me, I raised that 12 gauge and I blow this head off.
I feel something pulling at my leg. And I look over and there are two small gray entities pulling at me. And they're literally, I'm getting pulled off the bed.
I reach my hand into this bush and I touch air. Couldn't breathe and I couldn't move because I know I'm seeing a monster.
Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to the Confessionals Podcast. I'm your host, Tony Merkel. Thanks for being here. If you have a crazy, wild experience you want to share with me on the show, go ahead and shoot me an email. My email address is contact@theconfessionalspodcast.com. That's contact@theconfessionalspodcast.com. Or go to the website, theconfessionalspodcast.com, hit the contact section, and you can reach me that way as well. Either works for me. Just get a hold of me. If you want more shows on a weekly basis, we got you covered. Every Thursday, we drop a bonus show for members only and overtime segments when they're available. Those are to the members, to the website and on the YouTube membership section. Both things are exactly the same. It's just two different locations. So if you're like, what's better? Well, if you're on YouTube and you only like consuming things on YouTube, then the YouTube memberships is better for you. But if you don't care, then head on over to the website and become a member there, and you get access to the membership app over there. Also, go ahead and check out MerkelFilms.com. Sasquatch and the Missing Man is now available for on demand at MerkelFilms.com, along with the rest of our archive. Go ahead and check it out. And last but not least, MerkMerch.com. If you haven't got any of your merch apparel, what are you waiting for? Go ahead and check it out at MerkMerch.com. We have a bunch of different designs in there, a hat, and more to come. This is a warehouse that has everything stocked in it already. So when you put your order in, they pull it off the shelf and they ship it to you. There is no waiting. You get it within a few days. So go ahead and check it out, MerkMerch.com. Now, today we have Chad Riley coming on the show, and he is going to be talking about his documentary that just covers so much information. I mean, he had to cut out tons of stuff just to make it consumable for people. Did I say that right? Consumable for people. And I'll tell you what, friends, this was a fantastic conversation that I had with him. The highlight for me was getting into the government and military involvement in the sorcery and rituals. Jack Parsons, Aleister Crowley, a lot of those guys getting involved with government officials. We went into that direction with this conversation, and I think it turned out great. And we also covered the Council of Nine and how that might tie into CERN and the nine dead miners there that might have been possibly a sacrifice during that tunnel ceremony. So let's get to our conversation right now with Chad Riley. Let's go. All right, today we have Chad Riley on the show. Chad, what's going on, man?
What's going on, brother? It's good to see you again.
Yeah, man. I think this is the first time you and I talked to each other and looking at each other at the same time, because the last time you and I had a conversation on the show, it was episode 132, Hollow Earth and What Lives Within. And it was you, me, the Fall Brothers, and
Jim Wilhelmson.
Yeah, Jim Wilhelmson. And man, that show, like, first of all, I'll tell you what, I still feel like this a lot of times, but I really felt back then, I mean, you think 132 episodes, you got your gears rolling. I still was feeling the whole thing out. And I felt like I was a fish out of water during that conversation because, like, you guys are going all over these different directions. And I was just like, I don't know. Just let them talk. I have no idea what they're saying, but cool. You know? and that's how I feel a lot of times when I bring people on that are smarter than me. But that was a long time ago, man. That was years ago. And back then I didn't do any video. I just did audio because I was like, I'm a podcaster, not a YouTuber. Fast forward years later and I'm like, well, I'm a YouTuber now too. So we do everything on video. So it's great to see you, friend. And listen, man, like you're somebody that throughout the years has always been popping up on mainly Facebook for me. Either people send me a post that you made, or I don't know if you have like a mass email list or something, but I'll get a post in my private messenger from you. And it's just, you know, something. And it's just always been like, man, I got to get Chad back on the show. And then a few weeks back, I stumbled across a video with you and Derek Gilbert talking about your new documentary. It's like, there's my open door. Let's do this. So I want to open up the conversation talking about the documentary and the origins of it and how, you know, you got involved in all this. And we'll see where the conversation goes from there. But your new documentary, this is your first documentary, correct?
Yes, this is my first solo project. And I see that you've also jumped into the field as well.
Yeah. I don't even know how I did that. It just kind of evolved and happened. But you know, it's one of those things where with me and the show, what we're doing is, we're visiting locations where, you know, we talk about these stories on the show and why not go to these locations that these things have happened. And so I guess that's kind of how it all started for us. And I just kind of happened to stumble across guys in the field that could really help me take the story and bring it to life through video. So it's been really cool. But your documentary, Skinwalkers and Stranger Things of the Unseen Realm, you had me at Stranger Things and the Unseen Realm, to be honest with you. So I was like, when I saw the title of it, I was like, this is going to be good. And what was the whole motivation behind this documentary? I mean, like Skinwalkers and the Stranger Things of the Unseen Realm, it seems like it could be a mixed bag. When I look at the word skinwalkers, though, I automatically take the topic of skinwalkers and make it an interdimensional topic in my mind. I don't know if that's how you track with it or what, but what was the motivation here?
Yeah, it started out, after we had done Higher Entities, we'd gone to visit with our friend Keith at End Times Productions, and he had just interviewed Justin and Wes. I just went along for the ride. I wasn't actually planning on getting him behind the camera and being filmed, but he was like, Chad, he goes, you know so much. He's like, get over here and talk about something. I'm like, I didn't even prepare. I don't even know what you want me to talk about. He's like, just get over here and talk about something. He's like, talk about Skinwalker Ranch or some of that stuff. So I did the interview with him and it blew up, and it was one of his biggest interviews for the longest time. And I just started digging deeper and deeper into Skinwalker Ranch. And the more I dug into it, especially when I got into this whole hitchhiker phenomenon, that's what really just like blew it wide open, because that led into remote viewing. And that took me into alien abduction and encounters and different things, and got into Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard and Aleister Crowley and the Babylon Working ritual and everything. I mean, it just kept rabbit trailing into more things. And it's just like, okay, this is all completely 100% interconnected. It's like, this is all one big thing. And that's, like I said, I had about 488 pages of notes that I had to condense down into an 88 page script. And it was still, 2.5 hours long? So
there's plenty of content for a part 2 and 3.
Oh, yeah.
So how do you go from Skinwalker Ranch to the hitchhiker effect to remote viewing? So I understand the hitchhiker effect. I mean, you know, when we went to that area, we went to Space Wolf Research, which borders Skinwalker Ranch. And, you know, Ryan, the owner of that property, had told us about the idea of the hitchhiker effect, and that, you know, we might have something happen to us at home months later, things like that. But how do you go from, you know, uncovering the hitchhiker effect, I'm assuming connected to Skinwalker Ranch, to the remote viewing, to Aleister Crowley and Jack Parsons and all this stuff? I mean, it seems like a quite a domino effect you had going there. I'm having a hard time connecting all those dots. How does that happen for you?
That's funny that you bring up Ryan, because I just did an interview with him about a couple months ago.
Really?
And yeah, he's a good friend. But yeah, the thing about the hitchhiker phenomenon is when you look into it, especially some of the first people that were talking about it in the book that Kelleher and George Knapp had wrote, they talk about whenever it was a character that they named Axelrod, who has now been identified, who was actually the boss of David Grush, Lou Elizondo, and Travis Taylor. This gentleman was out there at Skinwalker Ranch back before, or right around the time that Bigelow had just purchased it. And after he left there, something attached itself to him, but it went home and it was terrorizing his family. And the wife just happened to look out the back window one morning, and she saw this gigantic 8-foot-tall wolf standing there on two hind legs staring at her. And I mean, it was like intently staring at her. And after a couple of minutes, she said that it just, and it was holding its hand, you know, its front legs up like this. It was, had its arms crossed and was just sitting there just staring at her, like, you know. And after a couple of minutes, it put its hands down by its side and it walked off on two legs. And she didn't say anything because she was like, maybe I just imagined that. And she also didn't want to freak her kids out. Well, a couple of days later, her kids just happened to be back there by the back sliding door, and one of them was walking by, and he looked out the window, and he just gasped really loud. So the other one jumped up and ran over, like, "What? What is it?" And then they said, "There it was again, standing there on two legs by this tree, just leaned up against this tree, just staring at him." And after a couple of minutes, they said it took off running down the road, and they said it was kicking up leaves, running on two legs. And jeez. That's the thing. You start looking into this whole hitchhiker phenomenon, you never know what it is you're going to get, because some people get orbs, some people get shadow people, some people get these wolf creatures, some people get aliens bopping around in their house, they get the orbs, UFOs. You just never know what it's going to be. And how it tied into the whole thing with remote viewing, I found out that the remote viewers were some of the first people that encountered it long before they ever started talking about it at Skinwalker Ranch. One of the remote viewers that Purich brought over was Uri Geller. And I know a lot of people probably heard of Uri Geller, about him bending spoons and stuff like that, but he supposedly was, not as powerful or as well known or well at it as like Ingo Swann, Pat Price, some of the, even Joseph McConnell and some of the other most well-known ones that are in part of the programs. But he was being studied by scientists. They wanted to see, you know, if they could measure or figure out how he was doing what he was doing as far as being able to perceive things and gather information from a distance. And while they were measuring him and studying, you know, how he was doing this, the scientists that were doing the measurements and studying of him, they started encountering the hitchhiker phenomenon in their homes, around their family, started seeing cryptids. They started seeing shadow people and orbs and different things going on in their homes, even poltergeist activity. So I was like, okay, that's weird. That's really bizarre, because you got it now into the remote viewing as well. And, you know, this happened to several of them, but Uri Geller was probably the most well-known case. And then I found out through my, you know, digging deeper and deeper into stuff, that one of the very first people to encounter the hitchhiker phenomenon was Kenneth Arnold, who was the first person who coined the phrase flying saucers. He was the one who saw the 9 craft flying over Mount Rainier, Washington. Well, after he had his encounter, in his biography, he wrote that they started having like poltergeist activity and bizarre things going on around the home. Even his daughter, who went on and did radio interviews, said the same thing, that there was all this poltergeist activity and bizarre hitchhiker phenomenon going on in their home after he had made the sighting.
Man, so what you're describing seems to like, and maybe you have a different perspective, but it seems like when this kind of activity happens to people, whether they're at Skinwalker Ranch, they're doing remote viewing, or they happen to have an encounter with UFOs, or it seems like this is not like, you know, 1+1=2 kind of thing where, you know, oh, you were remote viewing and that's why the hitchhiker effect happened. It's like, well, you were at Skinwalker Ranch and that happened, and you were, you had an encounter with UFOs and then the hitchhiker effect happened. It seems like there's a lot of things that can happen in the environment that you're in that these things can connect themselves to you. It's not just, I think it's, people want to believe and think that, you know, as long as I don't touch a Ouija board, I'm okay. Like nothing's going to attach itself to me because I'm not doing anything. But it sounds like, I mean, if you just happen to stumble across something and you have an encounter with UFOs, that could open a door for the hitchhiker effect. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that this hitchhiker phenomenon spreads like a virus. So that's the thing, is that it will spread out from you to your family, to your friends. It can even spread out to the workplace and neighborhood that you live in. And yeah, it's utterly bizarre. But yeah, it
makes sense. I mean, if you're having, let's just use, I think you said Axelrod, is that his name?
Yeah, that was the character. His name is Jay Stratton. He's been identified now.
Jay Stratton.
Well, you look into Jay Stratton, that's the thing, is like that guy, he was part of Naval Intelligence. I mean, he had so many accolades. I had to cherry pick just a few, and I was reading off for almost a couple minutes just all the different titles that guy held. But he, like I said, keep in mind that he's the same guy that was over Lou Elizondo. He was the same guy over Travis Taylor, and he was also over Dave Grush. So this guy, he's very high up on the food chain as far as where all this stuff is going. And like I said, he's tied in with Jacques Vallée. He's tied in with Gary Nolan. He's tied in with, Hal Puthoff. I mean, just tons of these people. He knows all of them. He, you know, was part of... tied in with Bigelow and all them out there at Skinwalker Ranch. I mean, he knows lots of people, but like I said, this guy, he's the one that still goes around and talks to all the senators and shows them. He's got like all the goodies, all the UFO footage, gives all the presentations, and he knows more than anybody probably.
That's interesting. I gotta get him on for an interview. Good luck, right? So he has his I think you said it was him that saw the upright wolf at the house, or no, his wife, right? And then the kids saw it.
Yes,
so you see the virus spread there. I don't know if in that particular case, if you have any information as to the domino effect moving forward into other people, but it does make sense that
the one of the sons, he started seeing orbs flying around in his bedroom, and he didn't say anything to any of his friends, but he had friends that lived in the neighborhood, and they started seeing orbs in their backyards. So like I said, that's how they found out that it was spread. And then even Jay Stratton, one of the ladies that he worked with, she started having poltergeist activity going on in her house, and her roommate got so terrorized by it that they just moved out within a matter of days. So yeah, it spread through the workplace, it spread through his children and their friends in the neighborhood, and yeah,
that's wild. So it really is like a virus, and it's almost it's very interesting, because I never really considered the hitchhiker effect on this kind of level, and this is something that maybe it could be a big reason as to why people have experiences that they have. I mean, if people unwittingly are around other people who have had experiences, or like say you're working with somebody who is, you know, playing with the Ouija board, and maybe they're into the dark arts, I mean, that could have an effect on your own life. Is that's the correct way of looking at that, right?
Yeah, that's completely the best way to look at it. And I mean, especially some of the stuff as far as like the shadow people. I don't know that there's an interview or a news clip George Knapp has done on his news channel where he talks about out of S2, these people and the military base out of S2 were seeing these shadow people running around on the bases and stuff. And like I said, you got some of these individuals. In fact, the wife of Jay Stratton said that she was seeing shadow people in their house walking around. She would be laying in bed and all of a sudden she would look up and she would see the shadow person just literally walking across the room. I mean, it's all completely interconnected.
Yeah, you say S2, that it rings a bell. That's out near Area 51, right?
It's actually, I think, in Las Vegas or out close to Las Vegas, okay. Somewhere out there.
I did a show years ago, and I think I called it something Area 2, and it was something to do with a military base. And the guy, he had different stories of these UFOs on the base. But towards the end, he talked about, it wasn't his direct experience, but it was relayed to him. But basically, the Area 2 base, I believe it was the Area 2 base, had they were doing some kind of experiments, and I don't know how else to describe it other than a mutated cat creature that they created got out, and it was a big thing on the base. Like, I mean, it they don't know what happened to it, kind of thing. So that rings a bell, and I wonder if it's the same base or not. I don't remember, but
it could be S20 because I know the S20 is Dulce.
Okay. Yeah. So all these S2s, S20s, 20 area code 215, like I'm at a loss a lot of times. So there's a clear, for a long time, and we've talked about this throughout the years on the show, you know, we I think when we started the show, we speculated, but then 2017 happened and it started becoming like this is something where the government is actively involved in this stuff. You know, when they start doing the UFO disclosure, and that kind of fizzled out towards the end of 2017, 2018, but then it kind of revamped up towards 2020. But it's clear that there's this government involvement, and you're talking about, I wrote down what you had said, Axelrod. I can't remember his real name, but when you talk about him and his involvement within our own government, it shows that there is this interconnected twine of involvement. When it comes to, you know, the Pentagon and the defense side of things, what is their involvement when it comes to maybe defense against these things? Are they more actively involved, do you think, on a personal level where they're having a relationship with this phenomenon? You know, because like I think you and I can probably agree that what's going on is an interdimensional thing. And is our government involved in a relationship with beings from another realm? Or how do you view that whole thing?
Well, according to the Air Force's, the OSI's own investigation, that they had looked into the whole thing about the UFO wave kicking off in 1947. Keep in mind that this was, Kenneth Arnold was the first person that had the encounter where he saw the nine craft. And then we had less than 2 weeks later, you had the whole Roswell incident that went down. But one of the things that came to light later on is that Kenneth Arnold and Jack Parsons actually were acquainted with one another. In fact, there's other investigators that have came out and said that they were actually flying buddies, and that they knew one another very well, and that they also had a very another connection, that they had a good friend that lived in Roswell named Robert Goddard, who was also into rocket technology. In fact, he also worked or did his experiments before he moved to Roswell. He did them in the exact same place where Jack Parsons and his Suicide Squad did all their tests, which was Devil's Gate Dam. So it's like I said, you just start seeing all these complete connections going back and forth. But again, getting back to Sam Bruno and his investigation with the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, the AFOSI, they started digging into it. And what really got them digging into Parsons was when he worked for Howard Hughes. He had already lost his top secret clearance, and then he regained his clearance. But when he worked for Howard Hughes, he took classified documents without permission. And that's what got them really digging into him. And when they started digging into him, San Bruno and his people that were under him, they started making all these connections that he's tied up into some sort of a satanic cult. He started looking into the whole thing about Thelema and the OTO, the Ordo Templi Orionis. And they quickly realized that, you know, there's more to this than what, you know, we even realized. Keep in mind, you know, we're talking about L. Ron Hubbard, who created Scientology. And that's another one of these things that just kept coming up in the research that I was doing, was that one of the biggest things that I found out that blew my mind when I came across this information was that a vast majority of these remote viewers were all Scientologists. So you got Ingo Swann and you got Hal Puthoff. They were both OT7s. That's the highest rank you can hold in Scientology. And come to find out that this is where they were learning the techniques for remote viewing. It was coming out of Scientology. Well, now that you know who created Scientology and that he was part of Thelema and part of this Ordo Templi Orionis, that this is where they were getting these techniques that they were using for remote viewing. So it's like, the more the Air Force was digging into him and all the people that he was associated with. And then when they found out about the Babylon working ritual that they'd been working on for almost 2 years and that supposedly they were successful. In fact, the Air Force went so far as to say they think he widened whatever the portal was that Crowley had opened back in 1904. They think that Parsons and Hubbard actually widened it and they were unable to close it. And, you know, then you got people like Kenneth Arnold, who took over Thelema after Aleister Crowley died, who was his personal secretary, making statements like, you know, it was a member of the OTO that, caused the whole great way or the UFO flap, and just, you know, boasting and bragging that, you know, it was one of us that got to do this, that caused all this.
Whoa. So you said a bunch of stuff that I'm like, whoa, hold on. So, I want to revisit three things that you said here, and maybe you can expound on, I'm going to start with the first one I wrote down here. Jack Parsons, Suicide Squad, and the Devil's Gate Dam. What is that? Like, what is that all about?
Yeah, that was the area where they used to go out there and do all their experiments when they were trying to, you know, launch these rockets that just kept blowing up and exploding. That's why they referred to themselves as a Suicide Squad, because they figured, you know, they're probably going to end up killing themselves. And, yeah, and like I said, it had this rocky outcropping that looked like a demonic face. And like I said, you got Parsons and his Suicide Squad out there performing these experiments. And keep in mind, every time that he would go out there and do this, before they actually tried to launch it or blow it up or whatever, he would do these rituals to the Greek god Pan. And this is the exact same spot that Robert Goddard performed all hit when he was out there doing the same thing, trying to launch these rockets and blowing things up. They were both in that same exact area. What are the odds and the coincidence, you know, of that happening?
Yeah, this is a documentary that hasn't been released yet, but we went on quite a journey, to be honest with you, across the state of Kentucky and into Tennessee for one. It'll be released in 2025, but the area in Kentucky, in the Somerset area, is an area that the Greek god Pan has been documented to be to have been tried. People have tried summoning the Greek god Pan in I believe it was Somerset, Kentucky, and I don't know if they were successful, but the Greek god Pan, seems to pop up a lot with this kind of stuff. And of all the ancient gods and stuff, why do you think Pan often pops up with this? What is it about Pan that they're trying to that they want to try summoning him over, I don't know, Zeus? I don't know.
Well, they're pretty much they're the same thing.
Don't tell Zeus me that. And, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
They're the same. In fact, up there, the case when Jesus was with the apostles at Caesarea Philippi, you got the Greek god Pan's domain right there, as well as the gates of Hades, and you had Mount Hermon. All three, are all visible right where Jesus asked. He said, who people say that I am? And, all the different apostles. Some say you're Jeremiah, some say you're this, some say you're that. He said, but who do you say that I am? And the only one was Peter. He said, you are the Christ, you're the Messiah. And he said, blessed are you for, my Father in heaven has revealed this to you, and no man has. And, the thing was, is when he was asking him specifically, when he was asking them that, it's like these were the three things that were right behind him. So he was specifically asking them. He was literally, like Mike Heiser said, he said he was sticking his thumb in the eye of the enemy and provoking him, because he knew that 2 weeks from that point that he was going to be crucified.
Man, that's wild. That's wild. I'm going to have to reassess all the Disney movies now. Been down that road. I've been down that road. You mentioned also about, the Babylon working ritual? Is that what you called it?
Yes. That was it was based off of the Amalantra working, which was the original ritual that Crowley had performed. And keep in mind, not too long after he performed, or while he was performing that, whenever he dealt with summoned the entity Awas that, gave him the Book of the Law. It, over a 3-day period, dictated the Book of the Law that he wrote down, which is also that's another one of those ones with, like, when I was reading some of Kenneth Arnold's writings, seriously, if you read his books, the Typhonian series, and I don't recommend anybody read it, but this guy brags and he boasts quite a bit. And in the book that I was reading out of his Typhonian series, Kenneth Arnold wrote one called Aleister Crowley and the Hidden God. And in that book, he says that the Book of the Law, part of the reason why the Book of the Law came into existence was to pave the way for the man of sin. And right after the Book of the Law was released, World War I broke out. Now, Crowley, he said that there was something to that. So, years down the road, he re-released it. And right after he released it the second time, World War II broke out. At that point, he became convinced that this has something to do with bringing about the end of the world, bringing about the man of sin, the son of perdition, and that this was causing a baptism of blood was the words that he used. And along with communism and abortion and all this other stuff, this was all paving the way, creating this baptism of blood for the man of sin that was about to come on the scene. In fact, what was it? It was Charles Reyes Tessel, Charles Hayes Russell. He was the one who started the Jehovah's Witnesses, and they had a prediction that the end of the world would begin on this date. I can't remember if it was October 2nd or October 4th, 1914. But whatever the date was that they predicted that was going to come about, that was the day that Jack Parsons was born. So how fitting is it that you got this individual born on the day that the Jehovah's Witnesses made this prediction that the end of the world would begin on this particular date, and that guy would go on to become the one that referred to himself as the Antichrist. And that he would be one of the ones that served under Aleister Crowley, who was 666, the beast, and that he would take his ritual, the Amalantra working, tweak it and call it the Babylon working ritual, And that was the thing, is they were trying to bring about the Whore of Babylon, bring about the Antichrist, and bring about the end of the world. And supposedly they were successful. We are now living in the end days because they, trying to help out the Bible, not that it needed any help, but that they wanted to bring about the end of the world. And that's the thing, is that they are in league, or were in league, with these entities. And like I said, I judge everything by their fruits. So you got the Scientologists, these OT7s, they're doing remote viewing. They're having these hitchhiker phenomenon, and just some of the stuff that they, and that's the thing, is, you know, people think the remote viewing is all nonsense. It's not nonsense. When you look at the data and you look at, I mean, why would they fund this program that, you know, if it doesn't yield any results, it has to be renewed every single year. Why would they keep renewing it for 20 years?
Yeah, I think we understand there's something to it. And I think that we'd be foolish to think that the higher ups wouldn't think there's something to it either. They do throw money at it. And they don't, you know, like, I don't want to say they don't throw money at things that they that aren't worth throwing money at, because they do that a lot too. But it's definitely something to consider. So if Parsons, you said Parsons said that he was the Antichrist, right?
Yes.
So where does that leave us then, according to his theology? If he was the Antichrist, then according to him, then we're no longer on the guard for an Antichrist at this point, right?
Now, the son of perdition has not come on the scene. He wanted to be, or he referred to himself as Antichrist. He, and that's the thing, is we know that there's going to be multiple Antichrists.
Right.
But he was, that was the thing, is that he wanted to bring about the Whore of Babylon and bring about the son of perdition. So that he supposedly, in his autobiography before he died, he had wrote that he was contacted by the spirit of the moonchild that he had created, and that it referred to itself as Hilarion, and said that I am here. What was it also? I thought just got away from me. I had another thought that I was going to tie in with that, but
you have a lot of thoughts in your head to keep track of, my friend. You got a lot of information. So with Parsons, then you had mentioned him and Hubbard had opened a portal even wider. Is on that premise and that thought process, would that portal still be open to this day then? And what would be going in and out at this point?
Yeah, and like I said, this is the part of the investigation that Sam Bruno and the Air Force had determined, that they believed that he had not only opened this portal, but that he had widened the one that Aleister Crowley had originally done back in 1904 when he made contact with AWOS. So
we're talking, you know, military involvement. I remember you saying in the documentary about there, I think you said something about there being sorcery at the Pentagon. Am I remembering that correctly? Or rituals on military bases?
That was a newspaper article that I incorporated in there, where we're talking about sorcery at the Pentagon, talking about a lot of this stuff as far as like rituals going on at military bases. And even the whole thing about the remote viewing program. Arizona Wilder, who's one of the people at the beginning of the film, you get to hear her talking about a lot of the satanic rituals that are going on out at military bases, and that naval intelligence is involved in a lot of this. But she also went so far as to say that a lot of people in naval intelligence are also part of the OTO, Ordo Templi Orionis. So that right there should tell you everything you need to know.
Yeah, I mean, so what would be, I guess this might be a basic elementary question, but like, what would be the purpose and motivations to be getting involved in, you know, these kind of rituals and stuff at their level? You know, I mean, is this basically signifying and saying that within our own ranks of military, they're using, you know, sorcery, magical means to accomplish what they're trying to accomplish on a military level?
All of it. It's all about power. It's no different than what the Nazis were doing back during World War II. Even the symbology that the Nazis were using as well, you know, the lightning bolts, you know, these are ancient runes, you know, even the swastika and so on. You know, people are like, the swastika, that's the Nazis. It's like, that symbol is over 2,000 years old. You know, it's like they were using ancient rune symbols because they believe that they have power. And they were trying to tap into that power, because a lot of people get hung up on this whole thing that the Nazis were all about, white supremacy, and it was all about eugenics and stuff like that. You're getting lost in the muddy water. It's like, really look at what it is that they were talking about and what were they saying. They believed that they were the descendants of the Aryans. And who are the Aryans? Well, the Aryans were descendants of the Atlanteans. Okay, well, who are the Atlanteans? Well, let's look at what Helena Blavatsky said about the Atlanteans. She said in her book, Secret Doctrines, Volume 2, and one of the things that she translated called the Book of Dizion, she says that they built statues the size of their bodies. That was 9 yadis high. Well, a yadi is 3 feet. So 9 times 3 is 27 feet tall. That's directly tying them into Genesis 6 and the Nephilim. They believed they were the descendants of the Nephilim. That's what they were tapping into, and that's what they were trying. And it's no different from all the other governments around the world, including the United States. And keep in mind that under Project Paperclip, we absorbed almost 1,600 Nazis. And when they came over here, they brought all their beliefs with them. And the U.S. military was already steeped in a lot of this stuff as well, and doing a lot of, very unethical experiments on humans. And I go through all that in the film as well. I show, because people are like, they couldn't be mixed up in this. They wouldn't get into that. And it's like, when you see what they're doing to their own citizens, how hard is it to believe that they got mixed up into the satanic? If something yields results, gives you power and, you know, technology and things like that, a lot, you know, that's not going to deter a lot of people.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that even before Project Paperclip bringing 1,600 Nazis over, our government was already involved in this esoteric type stuff, trying to, you know, gain an advantage by any means possible. All right, guys, today we got Simply Safe as our sponsor, and I've been talking about them for years, and I'll continue to talk about them for a little while longer because they are top notch. They are the only home security system that I've ever trusted, and I do not regret it. It is also something you can install on your own, which is super nice. You don't have to worry about somebody coming in and setting things up, but it's not the way you wanted it. You can do it all yourself, and it gets done extremely fast. And it is a very effective system. Listen, friends, last night I was at the studio till about 12:30 at night working on a bunch of crap that I'm not going to bore you with. And I got home around 1 o'clock in the morning. And the night before, I realized that my chickens hadn't gotten to the coop before the automatic door went down. And so I was like, let me just check. And so I went out on the deck and I shined a flashlight down in the back. And sure enough, I had 5 chickens out of the coop again. And I had to get down there to put them away because the predators come out at night. I go down there. I hear some creepy whatever thing running back and forth in the trees above me, probably an owl or something like that. And then I hear something walking off in the tree line right next to the fencing. Couldn't see it. I was shining a light. I couldn't see what it was, but I definitely heard something. And I'm scrambling around trying to pick up all these chickens, and I finally get them all into the chicken coop, lock them up, and then I got to make the trek back up to the house, which is it's a bit of a hike. I keep my chickens farther away from the house than I probably should. And I'm walking up towards the house, and I'm like, man, I don't know what's out there. I hear something walking out in those woods, and I'm hoping it's nothing too big. So I pull out the gun, and I'm walking up the hill, and it hit me. I got a SimpliSafe camera pointing out there directly at me. And it gave me some really assurance that if something came up at me and got me, it'd be caught on film and we could prove the world that Dogman exists. So that's why you should get SimpliSafe, to prove the world Dogman exists when it attacks you in your backyard after you're saving the chickens at 1 o'clock in the morning. All right, friends, listen, by partnering with SimpliSafe, I finally got a real peace of mind. I want you to have it too. Get an exclusive 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/confessionals. That's simplisafe.com/confessionals. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
Exactly.
Man. You know, we're living in real interesting times with what's being disclosed to the public and then who's doing the disclosing. So, you know, you got George Knapp and people like that who've been out for a long time. But now you're seeing people like Tucker Carlson. I mean, Tucker Carlson's talking about UFOs now for the last, I don't know, 6-7 years. And, you know, now that he's not at the network, I mean, it seems like he's talking more about it. And he was just on Rogan recently, really saying things, just kind of not handcuffed. There's no handcuffs on the guy. And he's saying things. And you know, there's part of me that I don't even know what the right word is. It's not jealous or envious, but there's part of me that's like, I've been saying this, you know, like, but now, you know, but Tucker Carlson says, like, no, we've been saying this, you know, but now that Tucker Carlson's saying it, now it has, you know, weight to it. Or now people are questioning Tucker Carlson's sanity. But, you know, he's talking about these UFOs, let's just say leave it at UFOs. He's talking about UFOs and the things that are piloting the UFOs being spiritual beings. Like I know it's groundbreaking for the rest of the world, but that's something that we've been kind of going down for a while now. And I pulled this up here, before, and I want to kind of steer you in this direction because I think it's interesting. And I think it does relate to the pop culture idea of Stranger Things. I told you before we started recording, one of the things that I take most joy in is telling people the clickbait phrase "Stranger Things is real." I love telling people that because they're like, "What crazy?" I'm like, "No, listen, it really is." For so many reasons, and I think what's going on here, I have a tweet here. I'm just going to read it so I can get the information out to you. In terms of those metallic spheres/drones, this is what alleged new firsthand UFO whistleblower Jason Sands had to say in the space last night, meaning an X space or a Twitter space. The metallic spheres are NHI, non-human intelligence drones. They're using them because our direct energy weapons are affecting their manned craft. And so like, the tweet goes on, but that right there, so Jason Sands saying that we're using direct energy weapons on manned craft that are coming from other realms, and now they're using their own drones because of that. To me, that tells me there's some kind of warfare going on right now between, I say us very loosely, and things coming from other realms, because, and I say loosely because I personally feel like there are coalitions and alliances between us humans and these other entities and beings. And I think what you laid out for the last 45 minutes, it draws that picture of people summoning entities, bringing entities into this realm, not just for the fun of it, but to work alongside of them for their own reasons. And so, if our government, our militaries are doing this, yet we're also warring, it seems like there's this, the only way I can think of it is if we're shooting down things that are coming from other realms, yet we're working alongside of things that are coming from other realms, it tells me that in these other realms, there are opposing factions as well. Does that make sense at all? I don't know how else to describe it. I mean, we talk about like, you know, angelic beings like God's angels, and you had the fallen angels. Well, those two factions would be warring with one another. But then you have these other ancient gods, you know, Psalm 82, these other God entities. And it's just like, to me, I think that this other realm, and maybe it's probably more definitely multiple realms, and the things that exist in these realms, there seems to be a hierarchy and a constant struggle. I just find it interesting that this guy is saying that we're actually shooting.
Now you're pretty close to being right on target with what you're talking about, whether you realize it or not. The whole thing about these them encountering these crafts, even in the FBI document that I brought up in Higher Entities film, FBI document 6751, they talk about these things are interdimensional and coming from another dimension. And they said that they can appear at will. And it talked about don't engage with these things because they have some sort of particle weapon. And then even George Knapp here recently on one of his interviews, one of the last ones he did with Jeremy Corbell on Joe Rogan's podcast, he talked about that when he went to Russia and they gave him a lot of the documents where they've been having encounters and studying UFO phenomenon, they gave him documents showing how the at one point their military used to engage with these things whenever they would come in contact. And after, you know, three different occasions where they engaged with a UFO, you know, all three craft were shot down, but two pilots were able to eject out of different craft, but the third one, they actually killed the pilot. And after that, the Russian military told them, that's it, don't engage with these things anymore. They have, you know, possible, you know, unknown powers of retaliation, and just to leave them alone. And you're talking, you got into the whole thing about Psalms 82, about the other gods that are talked about, the gods over the nations that have become corrupted. And that's why in that passage, you know, he says that you shall die like men. Well, the reason why he told them that, because they are gods, that they are going to die like men because they have become corrupted and they've corrupted humanity. And his one portion, which was Israel, which was his land that he rules over, you know, you get into the whole thing with the next book the next film that I'm going to do is going to be Over the Nine. And what that gets into is there has been nine gods throughout every pantheon of every civilization that have ruled over all the other gods. And, you know, you get into the Egypt, you look at the Aeneid, or the Aeneid, and you got the nine gods that ruled over Olympus. You know, the nine that ruled over India, the nine that ruled over Mesopotamia, and so on. It just goes on and on and on. And so that, I just found that very odd and unique that there was these nine gods that kept talking about throughout different, you know, different pantheons and different civilizations. Like, what is up with all this? And then you start looking at some of the stuff that Aleister Crowley said. And he said, I serve my god Lucifer and his Augustus Council of Nine. And he actually names all nine of them. And, you know, the head being Lucifer. So then I'm like, okay, that's, you know, because you start looking at different gods and different, you know, different things. And they all have the same qualities, you know, whether this be the storm god over here, he's a storm god over here, he's a storm god over here. It doesn't matter what. They might have different names, but they're the same entity. And that's where I'm going to go with this next film that I'm going to do is I'm going to get in and I'm going to show how they've been around forever. They've been here since the Garden of Eden, and that they are the Augustus Council of Nine. And you know, even Purich and all them who was tied up with Uri Geller, he was part of this group that was making contact with these entities called the Council of Nine. And, you know, Gene Roddenberry was tied up in all this. You know, he was part of Lab 9 as well as the Round Table and all the other names that this group all held. But he was sitting there writing every single thing down that these entities were dictating. And this is where we get the TV show Star Trek that everybody is just so beloved, and just, you know, and when you really start looking at how much he incorporated of all the stuff that he was being told by these entities into the television show, you know, the 9 crew members on the bridge, the NCC 1701, 1 + 7 + 0 + 1 = 9. And then you got Deep Space 9. You got the 9 Bajoran gods that live in this wormhole. And I mean, just the more you sit here and start putting all this together, it's like, holy cow. It's like, and then, you know, even when you find out that, what is it? The one that shot Kennedy. Goodness, I can't think of his name.
Oh, Jack Osborne. Not Osborne. Oswald, right?
Yeah, Oswald, he was mixed up in this group. He was part of this group that was channeling the 9, the Council of 9. It's like, so yeah, that's a whole story all itself. So I was like, okay, this is going to be the next one I'm going to tackle.
I can't wait for that. I kind of messaged you about that a little bit because I just looked up just an article, and if this article is what you're talking about, first of all, let me ask you, so are you saying the Council of 9 are more than likely, if not in your mind, already assured that they are the gods of Psalm 82?
I believe so. They are part of that group.
Wow.
And they are and the 9 are the top 9 out of that group that rule over all the other ones.
Interesting. So you got the top 9, and then there's still a layer underneath of that, which adds to the complexity, which is what I was talking about, which is what you're talking about. There is layers to this, and I honestly wish it was as simple as happy angels, bad angels, demons, Lucifer. That's it. Like and God, right? Like I wish it was that simple, but it seems like there's a whole history of this other realm that we do not have readily accessible information on that just spells it out for you. Simply, there's a whole history that is being revealed.
It really is, and that's the thing. It's, you know, a lot of people they know about the fallen angels. They know about the 200 that came down on Mount Hermon back in the days of Jared. But it's like, who were they? Why did they come? What was their purpose? And when you really start digging in and looking into all this, it's not hard to come to the conclusion. It's like this was a complete, think of it like a commando unit. And they were sent here with the intent purpose of blotting out the coming of the Messiah. Because keep in mind, back in the Garden of Eden, when, you know, what happened, you know, God laid down judgment on the serpent. He said, I'll put enmity between her seed and your seed, you know, and that, you know, you will bruise his foot while he crushes your head. They already knew what was coming. They knew that there's something to do with the bloodline. And so that is why they sent this commando unit of 200 fallen angels to Mount Hermon to basically corrupt all flesh on the planet and to corrupt all animals on the planet, everything, so that way they could blot out the coming Messiah and prove God to be a liar.
It is amazing to consider all this stuff we've been talking about and how it kind of goes back to ancient times. Is the Council of 9, is Apollo and Zeus part of that?
Yes.
Man.
And you know about CERN. I know that you know about the Temple of Zeus,
yeah,
which was the same temple that they had disassembled and carried to Nazi Germany. And that was the same temple that whenever Hitler was up there foaming at the mouth, giving his speeches, he's standing on the exact same temple that was the seat of Satan, the Temple of Zeus. And so, and it just, you know, again, why are they getting into all these ancient artifacts and ancient symbology and writings and so on? It's like there is a reason and method behind. Even the fact that after World War II, when they moved the temple to Berlin, and then all of a sudden, then the Berlin Wall goes out and everything breaks crazy over there. It's like there's something about these temples, these artifacts and symbols and symbology, all this. There is something to this.
Something to it for sure. And you brought up CERN, and yeah, I kind of want to just pick your brain on what I had messaged you earlier on, because when you mentioned about the Council of Nine, I had just got done looking at something, and I was reading about the nine miners that lost their lives during the construction of CERN, and how when they had the opening, the ceremony for the tunnel, they did a whole ritual that was honoring those nine miners. And I it was like a passing thought, I think I shot over your way. I was like, is it possible that those nine miners could have been more on along the lines of sacrifices for this Council of Nine? I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Does it tie together at all, or is it just me reading tea leaves that aren't there?
I wouldn't think that you could be too far off target. I mean, you could be very close to the truth with all that, because I mean, they love their numbers. We know they love numerology, and you know, the whole thing about gematria and so on. And they love their human sacrifices as well. But yeah, there's definitely something to that. And like I said, when you find out that that same temple we were just discussing, the Temple of Apollo, was actually moved, but it used to be smack dab right in the middle of the Large Hadron Collider, and that they believe that that is where the bottomless pit is located underneath that area in particular.
Wow.
And that they are, and I know that you also, I think you brought up about them, when they would fire it up, they kept seeing these portals opening up, and they were seeing entities moving around, and they've been talking about that for a long time, that every time they fire it up, depending on how powerful it is when they do it, these things, not only do they appear while they're doing this, but they will go on for weeks after they shut the machine down, that these things continuously start showing up and shadow people moving around out there at CERN and different things like that. So, yeah.
It's funny because I live here in East Tennessee, and we have our own little mini CERN at Oak Ridge. And I was at a birthday party, a kid's birthday party this past weekend, and I was talking to one of the parents, and he works at CERN, or not CERN, at Oak Ridge. And I asked him, I said, because he brought about the particle accelerator, and I said, yeah, you know about CERN. And he's like, no, what's CERN? I was like, oh, brother. I was like, how much time do you have? You know? do you think that what we see happening at CERN is more than likely happening at these other smaller particle accelerators? I think it's China that was talking about building one that's bigger than CERN, or maybe they're constructing it now. But I mean, I've heard stories coming out of my local particle accelerator that makes me feel like whatever is happening at CERN is being mirrored in these other locations as well. I know we have one in Chicago area as well.
Yeah, I think there's a couple in Texas as well. Mm. There's quite a few of them located all over the United States that most people aren't even aware of. And I've heard bizarre accounts out of several of them.
Yeah.
In fact, I believe was Aaron Melissa Dykes at True Stream Media. They've done a couple, or at least one episode that I know of, talking about multiple Hadron Colliders located all over the planet.
It's a fascinating topic to dive down the whole thing, because it ties into so much stuff. And I think what you do, and people like you, you really kind of do these deep dives into these topics, and you're really helping to marry it all together for people to see how it is all intertwined and connected. And it's not easy to do, because there's so much information out there, but also so many branches to go down that circle back around to one another. I commend you guys for doing what you guys do. So with the idea of Stranger Things, okay, Stranger Things is real. I've already established that. Are monsters, creatures coming from other realms into this realm? Do you think that's something that if from the TV show can be mirrored into this reality of our lives? I personally say yes, but what do you say?
I say you're 100% correct. In fact, the true story of Stranger Things. When Duncan and all them were out there, which I know that you probably read the book where it ties in with the Philadelphia experiment and all that. They said that the last time that they had fired up the machine, because they had this chair called the Montauk chair that the kids would sit in, and it somehow enhanced their powers, their abilities. And I think that this was tying in with remote viewing, to be honest with you. That was the thing, is that a lot of these children, they were kidnapping them straight off the street. These were like runaway kids. And they would literally torture these kids. I mean, they tortured them, not just psychologically, but physically as well. And they would, you know, beat animals in front of them and kill animals. They would do horrible things to the kids. Talked about picking them up, having like a tub full of ice water and a tub full of hot water. And they would yank them out of one tub and throw them into the other and just keep doing this back and forth until eventually their minds would just shatter. And Russ Dizdar, he did an awesome job in his book, The Black Awakening. I'll never forget one of the things I read in there that he talked about. He said that they shatter their minds to open them up to demonic possession. That is the key takeaway about satanic ritual abuse that most people just really, you know, they're like, why do they do this? Why do they torture their kids and do these rituals and abuse their children? Well, that's why. They're literally trying to open them up to demonic, because, you know, they want something to come in and to inhabit them. They're opening the doorways deliberately. This is why some of these people are just so completely evil. I mean, because they are demonically possessed, straight up. You know, and they can be people of power, and people say that, you know, what is it? I've heard the thing they say, that narcissists make the best businessmen and salesmen, because they're just so cutthroat, and, you know, it's like they have no empathy whatsoever. Why do you think that is? Because a lot of these people are demonically possessed. That's why they could thrive in business. And, you know, the same thing with the music and movie industry. None of these people get into these positions of power unless they sell their souls. And they all openly talk about it. There's a great series that Goodbye Ministries has put out called They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. And you can hear it straight from the horse's mouth. They will tell you that they literally sold their souls so that they could have positions of power. You know, look at what's coming out right now with P. Diddy and all this. He's another Epstein. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing is that you will, one of the things that I did find out doing this research for the film is that Satanist and espionage go hand in hand. You get into the intelligence agencies and espionage and all that, you will always come face to face with Satanists, people that are doing satanic rituals. Because, I mean, even Aleister Crowley and all his cronies, all his buddies, they all worked for the intelligence agency. He worked for British intelligence. A lot of people don't know that. It's not a hard thing to uncover. You can do a little digging and you'll find out real quick, yes. And that was one of the things that they were very embarrassed about. But, you know, going all the way back to like John Dee and Queen Elizabeth, they've always gone hand in hand.
I refuse to believe that Taylor Swift is anything but pure hearted. Okay, sir. So I'm just kidding. I'm not a Swiftie. But no, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. When you were bringing up the Montauk Project, I just last week was on the phone with a guy. Maybe the recording will happen. Maybe it won't. I'm not sure. Not sure yet, for many different reasons. And just to be honest with you, one of the reasons is that I'm not sure it's fair to do that to him. You know, there are some people. You're listening. All right, let me just say it this way. I'm talking to the guy and he's telling me about how from his childhood, how certain things happened to him. And one of the things that happened to him was he was called to his principal's house with his parents. And they had this meeting about why he's not working in the school. And he wound up getting put into a program. He later then said that his parents basically sold him into the program. But he would travel from Indiana to New York as a child. They would drive there, and then his parents would fly back and leave him in New York. And he said that he was going into this, he didn't say it was a school, it was like a facility, and they started doing like these tests on him and torturing and this, that, and the other. And he's talking about all this stuff, and but he didn't say it as clear as I just said it to you. And I just, after like 30 minutes, I just stopped him. I said, are you talking to me about Camp Hero? Are you telling me you were part of the Montauk Project? He's like, yes. And I said, why didn't you just say that? And he said, I didn't know if you knew what that was. And so I'm like, yeah, I know what that is, you know? And I started, he was talking about, and his, this is I think a common thing with people that are involved in this stuff is that this affects them their entire lives, that they're trying to recover from it. And he said that he was put into this program with two other kids, and the two other kids, he said, were highly intelligent. He wasn't on that level of intellect. And he said when they were done with these kids were mentally handicapped. They just abused the snot out of them. And but the reason why I say I'm not sure if he's gonna be on or not is because I find that, and I've talked to several people like this man, very hard to get the quote unquote story, the idea out of them. It's all so compartmentalized and chopped up. The story, their life story of them sharing it seems to be very fragmented and doesn't make much sense until you start piecing things together. And I just don't know if it's a good marriage for the show per se. But I hung up with the guy. I absolutely believe in him. It's just one of those things where it's so deep and intertwined that these people, the things that people go through, how do you reveal that in an episode, you know? But it's just, again, these government programs being so intertwined with the occult and magic, other realms, trying to bring things in to possess people, demonic entities, monsters coming from other realms. You mentioned Duncan. It's reality is mirroring Stranger Things. Reality is mirroring the science fiction.
Oh, and real quick, I didn't finish my thought because I started rattling off going down a rabbit trail. But what you were saying about these things being real and interdimensional and that, you know, cryptids and so on, that the last time that Duncan was in the chair, one of the operators had walked up and said something like the time is now or something like that, because they were getting ready to shut the program down. That's when he envisioned some sort of a creature. And what was crazy about it is when this thing showed up on the base out there at Camp Hero that you're talking about, different people saw different things. And I'll bring up another point about Skinwalker Ranch where they had something similar. They talked about how some people said this thing was 9 feet tall. Other people said it was 30 feet tall, but they said it was huge and it was hairy. And you listen to the description of it and they say it sounds like a gigantic Bigfoot that just literally went on a rampage and just started destroying everything in sight. And, you know, finally, whenever they were able to, kill the power to the chair or whatever and stuff, that's when it finally came to a conclusion and stopped. But even out at Skinwalker Ranch, in one of the books that I read, they talk about how one night there was three men out there somewhere on the ranch. I don't know exactly what area they were in, but they all three saw this light. And what was bizarre was whenever they were using their night vision goggles and so on, they were looking, each one saw something different. You know, one person saw a triangle. Another person saw a sphere, another one saw a square, but you know, they all saw something different and they could see that light was emanating from whatever this object was. Even the pilots that encounter some of these craft, they talk about how, you know, that, you know, those multiple pilots will see it, but they talk about different kinds of craft, you know, they're seeing something different. And so, like I said, these things have the ability to appear whatever they want to appear as to us. And so
it's something that has be coming popular with just coming across the desk for me. Most recently, I did an episode with Mike Cleland. I call him the owl guy. Like, that's what he does. And I think he probably calls himself the owl guy. I mean, if you're looking to figure out why people are seeing owls during, you know, UFO encounters or things like that, he's pretty much the guy for that. And he had his own experiences and stuff that kind of launched him into this research. And he just, you know, he strikes me as more agnostic than anything as far as his perspectives on life. But one thing that he talked about was how people will sometimes have an experience together where they will see a 4 foot, 5 foot owl, right? Like, so say you and I are in the car together and we're like, whoa, what is that? You know, that doesn't exist. A 5 foot owl doesn't exist. And I'm like, did you see that? And you're like, yeah, I saw it. I'm like, that owl was huge. And you're like, what owl? I didn't see an owl. I saw an upright walking dog, you know? And like, people are seeing, they're having an experience, but they're not seeing the same thing. And I think he related to screen memories and like, so these things, whatever they are implanting memories and visions and ideas into our head. And it's different for each person. It's an interesting topic to go down, but it's also all this is disconcerting. The fact that we launched the conversation off with the hitchhiker effect and how, just because you have nothing to do with this topic, just because you're in my mere presence and I went to the property, you're susceptible to, you know, having this stuff happen. I think this is all just fascinatingly bizarre. And I guess my last question for you would be to tie this up. I bring up the hitchhiker effect. With all this stuff that you have been researching and things like that, have you had experiences of hitchhiker effects just by looking into these things?
I don't believe that I've had any experiences as far as the hitchhiker phenomenon, but real quick to add what you were just talking about, Carla Turner, who was one of the leading ufologists out there, who's also a Christian that has since passed away, she got into a lot of that about them, you know, manipulating how we perceive them sometimes, as well as trying to trick people. She had a story in there talking about that involved her son and her daughter-in-law. And in the story, she talked about how the daughter was outside of the car. They pulled up, but she didn't remember how she got out of the car. She's just standing there. She knows that the car is to her back, and she's seeing what looks almost like a like a doorway, but it's camouflaged, or it's, you know, like the predator. It looks like the predator. It's just, yeah, a silhouette, an outline. And she's looking at this, and she keeps hearing her husband tell her, come on, you know, come with me, or something like that. And she sees this doorway standing there next to him, and she's just like, you know, I don't want to go over there. And she's like, you know, finally, she says she finally turned around and looked back. And when she turned around and looked back, she saw her husband sitting in the car frozen, and he was not moving.
Wow.
And at that point, she realized that that was not her husband that was standing in front of her, that it was something posing as her husband, trying to get her to go with it. And even Sharon Gilbert, I don't know, you know, Derek Gilbert's, yeah, wife, she even tells a story how she one night, there was something posing as Derek laying in her bed. And she said as soon as she laid eyes on it, she knew that that wasn't Derek. I mean, yeah. So
that's, well, both are terrifying. You know, one of these days I got to talk to Derek and Sharon Gilbert. It's just one of those things that I always say, I got to do these things and I never get around to it. Right. But you're talking about this, this shimmering doorway, we'll call it, you know, I know what you're talking about. I lack the verbiage myself for it. I've talked about it several times now, even entities appearing that way. But that particular instance where there's this shimmering doorway, her husband's there saying, come to me. It really makes you wonder how often that happens. And does that have anything to do with the missing 411 type scenarios where people are going missing seemingly, you know, without a trace. There's no reason or cause to it. They're just gone. I mean, what if?
Well, you know that some of the situations where that has happened, where somebody went missing and they vanished. David has a few stories where you can actually hear the person. You can hear them, but you can't see them. You can hear them screaming for help. And they'll walk around for like hours and they can hear them screaming out, hollering for help. And it's like they're getting dimmer and dimmer and dimmer until eventually you just can't hear them anymore at all. Mm. And yeah, so again, is that they've gone into another reality?
The upside down, man. Like that's the upside down. Like literally, she's saying, "Will, I hear you, but I don't see you." And he's like, "Mom, I hear you, but I don't see you." That's wild. That's wild.
Did you ever watch the TV show Debris? Did you ever see that
one? No. Where can I see it?
Yeah, there was you might be able to find it online. It's called Debris. And in one of the episodes, it's about this UFO that came into our galaxy. And as it got closer, it hit something and it literally disintegrated and pieces of the ship came raining down all over the planet. Well, different parts of this debris do different things. And in this particular one episode, it has something to do with this. It's illuminating a portal. And they get into the whole thing about portals in this episode. And whenever this piece of debris activates, a portal will appear. And you see like this rectangular window. And you can see shadow people moving around in there. And they come up close to the thing. And they're all touching it. And come to find out, one of the people that they can hear in there went missing like, I don't know, maybe about 10, 12 years in the past. And she said that, it comes to find out later on that she had went to go, her and her dad were out shopping. She decided to go back out to the truck. And as she was walking outside to get in the truck, she walked through a portal and she's been stuck in this dimension all this time. And at the end, they finally able to activate it and open the portal up, and all the people that were trapped inside, and there was multiple people, and there's like 30 or 40 people that had been trapped in there for different periods of time.
Wow.
So,
all right. So I love talking about this stuff. So from your perspective, I don't care if you agree with me or not. I tend to think that people, whether it's accidental or on purpose, can traverse realms. I don't know how, but I think it's possible. And I have a guy that, and I was talking to you about him actually before we started recording, that at the time of this recording, he'll be getting released for a member show tomorrow or Thursday this week. He basically says just that. I mean, but here's the crazy thing, man. Like he said, as he was entering this other, being taken to this other realm, it was different because I think he said it was like two or three men, I think bald guys with beards and mustaches were there, and they were kind of caught off guard that he could even, like, he was awake, he could see them. And they informed him that they were preparing him for surgery to have, I guess, physical upgrades for a coming war that he was going to be involved in.
I close my eyes and I'm going into the other realm. But this time I open my eyes and I'm looking up and it's all white. And then there's three men standing above me. So I don't see any colors or anything. I see white, and there's three men. They're bald like me. One of them has a mustache. Two of them have glasses, and they're in white coats. And I start freaking out. But two of them look at each other, and one of them says, "He's not supposed to see us." And I start fighting. And then that's when, right here in the right behind my right ear, I feel a poke, and it's like I'm being electrocuted. My body goes into convulsions. It's like I'm being electrocuted. I thought I'm dying. They told me they were upgrading me for war, an upcoming war. Whatever that is, I have no idea. I don't know anything about all this stuff.
And he is one of several people that I've either talked to or know about that have done this traversing of realms. Some people do it through, you know, mushrooms or some kind of drug. Some do it through lucid dreaming. And some get to a point where they're able to do it almost on demand. And so, I mean, like, that's my perspective coming from my show, doing my show, talking with people. What are your thoughts on it? Like, do you think that that is probably still the science fiction route of things? Or do you think people could actually traverse realms through these portals and stuff? Like what the lady you were talking about. I mean, if she would have said yes, do you think she would have gone to another realm that wouldn't have killed her, but she would have been somewhere else?
That's very well a possibility. And I know that briefly before we got started, I'd brought up when you mentioned that, I said something about the... And I haven't done a whole lot of research into this, but it sounded like something called the Deros, these entities that can come into our space-time. But usually whenever they are about to appear, people describe that everything around them just starts to get really bizarre. Like, and you know, just some of the stuff that I've read about that, it reminded me also of The Missing 411, where David Pollard would talk about whenever... you are out in the open, and he says that if like everything goes quiet, like the birds, the insects, and the wind goes still, and it gets completely quiet, he said that you need to sit down and stop moving, because, you know, he says that usually that's a telltale sign that something's about to happen. So you could end up disappearing. And he said that if you're with somebody, you all need to sit back to back and just sit still until the sound and the wind picks back up again. But there's also another thing I didn't mention to you. One of the things that I got into in the film was a group of individuals called the Riders that Linda Moulton Howe had made contact with through a friend of mine named Ray Boucher. He had put her in contact. You might have heard of Ray Boucher. Some people know this group as the Collins Elite. It's not necessarily the Collins Elite. That's a name that a moniker that somebody gave to him, a writer. And, but they were actually known as the Writers, as, when Linda Moulton Howe was actually dealing with them and talking to them. This is a group of individuals within the DOJ, the Pentagon, that were witnessing a lot of the satanic rituals and things that were going on at military bases and different things. And they were highly disturbed that, you know, not only was this stuff, was it being done and being carried out, but that it was very real and that it was yielding results. And so one of the things that they talked about in the paperwork that Ray Boucher sent me, he said that some of these people are being taken. Excuse me. Some of these people are being taken. And they almost like in suspended animation, it almost looks like they're in crystals and they are just literally frozen in time. And so that was another thing that they got into that they were talking about. It said that some of these people are being taken. They don't know exactly why they're being taken, for what purpose, but they said that they know that they are being taken to other places and that they are literally in like a suspended animation.
So many things to uncover and discover. So little time. So, hey man, listen, I appreciate you hopping on with me and talking about all this stuff. I just think it's so fascinating. You cover so much information on the documentary. The link for the documentary, we're going to put in the description of this episode. Again, the title is Skinwalkers and Stranger Things of the Unseen Realm. I love it. I appreciate you coming on and talking to me and, you know, indulging me in my nonsense. I appreciate it. I just thank you very much, man. It's been a long time and hopefully we can do it again, especially when you come out with the next one, like the nine gods, like that's something I want to hear about.
Yeah, I look forward to getting that out. And it's a pleasure as always, come on here and hang out with you. And hopefully we can do it again soon. And I look forward to checking out your film as well.
Thought my old motto was a VA. I was working four cylinders to death. Put it on me, no teammate. Dreams running on fumes, no rest. You could bargain for my soul for a mansion and a couple billboards, no less. Yeah, thank God for a couple roadblocks. I don't know if I'd have stopped where the road ends. Spend so many years on the sidelines, trying to be the highlight, but under the bright lights, breaking all the guidelines. Yeah, Mr. Bull with no lifelines. Yeah, screaming, I don't need you. Fighting, but I'm free too. Neon lights make a path for my breath, like smoke in the cold every weekend.